Welcome, Jets fans, to this week's preview edition of the Jets Stream, where we're going to talk about the upcoming fixture for round 5 of the A-League, where the Jets are travelling over the ditch to Wellington to take on the Phoenix. Joined this week on the podcast, first of all, welcome back, Emma.
Hoi hoi.
How you doing?
Excellent.
That's good. And I'm also joined and meeting him for the first time is Anthony. How are you?
Good, thanks, mate. How are you?
I'm good. Nice to finally talk and meet you. We've been managing to avoid each other by doing the review and preview podcasts, and it's the first time we've crossed paths.
Yeah, about time, mate.
All right, as is tradition, we're going to get straight into the opening question. And Emma, I'll start with you. What's the earliest memory that you have of football?
I think mine's going to be very different than yours because I didn't watch much TV growing up and I grew up in the country. And so I'd not seen a game on TV or anything when I was a kid for a very long time. But we played at school. I went to a very small school and so all the kids played together kindergarten till year 6 at lunchtime on the field. But our school's soccer field had a power pole in the middle of it. So the first time I can ever remember playing soccer as a kid was when a guy was dribbling the ball and trying to make a run all the way up the field and went headfirst into that power pole and knocked all his teeth out.
Wow, that's impressive.
That's really good.
Because I don't think we got a TV station out my place that would actually have played football on it till I was, I don't know, 18, and I'd already seen live games by then. So, yeah.
Where did you grow up?
Just down in the country. Out in the valley, it was just a backward place.
Right, yeah, well, we won't go any further
there.
Some
of the grey lands just out past Maitland, I imagine.
Kind of, yeah.
Anthony, what about you, mate? What's your first or earliest memory of football?
Yeah, so I'm going to be awkwardly specific. So my dad used to be actually on the National League panel for referees. So, you know, we've always sort of, I guess, been involved in, no, you know, 2001, I was a young 7-year-old whippersnapper watching the Brisbane Strikers against Graham Arnold's Northern Spirit at Ballymore Stadium up in Queensland.
Well, that's a pretty good introduction to football. Who do you remember from the game? Who do you remember watching run around?
I remember Richie Alligich. He was really imposing as a centre back.
For me, my first memory or my earliest memory of football probably goes back to when we were a kid and we were being looked after by my grandparents during the school holidays. I remember, I actually remember watching a taped game of the 94 World Cup, and my granddad had taped the World Cup final. And my earliest memory is actually watching the famous penalty where Roberto Baggio, the divine ponytail, and put it straight over the bar and ended up handing Brazil the World Cup. So that's my earliest memory. But I guess from a Newcastle football perspective, my earliest memory is watching the Newcastle United, watching the Jets, well, I guess watching Newcastle United. And I just remember Johnny Majerovsky coming on the field and having to run around and just something that stuck with me. I don't know why. Maybe because I know him outside of football now, but it's just funny how that goes. Anyway, well, good answers. And if anyone wants to share their earliest memory of football, you can obviously get in touch with us online and really like to hear what you remember as your first memory of football. So we'll get straight into something different. We're going to go straight into the Recovery Lounge this week and listen to Grant and Todd from the Fill the Hill Friday podcast and hear what the boys have been getting up to and seeing at training.
Look, the other thing we need to talk to, and what we'll do now is we'll move into our report from the Recovery Lounge. Yeah. And Ben Kantorowski, that was devastating to see, mate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had the binoculars out watching him because he was at the opposite end. He was at the northern end, sorry, the southern end, under the big video screen end. and he looked like he was in a hell of a lot of pain.
I was going to say, yeah.
So, I've seen some media reports. He's torn a meniscus, so we believe, which is that could be out for ages, mate. Yeah. Have you heard anything?
At this stage, I think we're sort of looking at 2 to 3 weeks.
Oh, that'd be good news if that was the case.
I don't know whether it's quite as bad. I was talking to Nigel Bogart the other night at Spears Point, and he's had a lot of scans, and they sort of can't tell whether it's a new injury.
Right.
Like because of the amount of knee surgeries that she had in the past, they're actually having trouble now saying, yeah, it's definitely this is torn, or yeah, that's...
It's a new injury or a damage of an old injury. Yeah, okay. Well, it's...
I'm sort of rating him at a 2 to 3.
Right, okay. What else have you got there for
Lockie
us?
Lockie Jackson, I think, 5 to 6. We saw him Friday sort of walking around in a boot.
His moon boot. But he's still, the thing that got me is when he was in a moon boot, guys, with boxing gloves on.
Yeah.
Him and Mullins. They're both in boots with boxing gloves on and sweating up a storm because Jonesy still got him in there and doing boxing practice. So I don't know how you'd go. Lockie's a big boy and Dan is solid as a rock. But if you moved around a bit, I reckon you could have him because they can't move very fast when they're boxing. But so anyway, that was good to see that they're doing that sort of exercise and fitness training and that, because I always wondered about that. What do they do in that regard? Because that's a big cardio boxing. Yeah. And from there, and they come out from the tunnel there at McDonald Jones Stadium, and I looked at them and I thought, what are these guys doing? And then they put their hands up and they got boxing gloves on. So, you're saying, was that 5 to 6? What did you say?
I think 5 to 6 was the last
right.
I heard. I'm still rating Dan Mullen at a 6+.
Right, yeah. Well, I think
sort of a couple of weeks in, that was a 8 to 12.
Yeah, I think we said last week he was about 10 or 11. So you're thinking you're still...
Yeah, I'll rate him at a 6+, and that way we don't get into trouble.
We can't go wrong.
Dan Lucy's still out for the season, but he's been... saw him this morning on the bike, and in previous sessions, he's been out doing a bit of field work with Justin Doherty, the physio, so it's sort of good to see he's back to on field.
Looking up there at the moment, they must be, getting physio done or whatever. Up in the recovery lounge, they're inside at the moment. The bike's out there, but nobody's on it, so there's a couple of people moving around. And we could walk over there, but it's a hot day.
So we'll stay
under the shade.
Ben Kennedy, I was talking to him after training last week, and he's had surgery, went really well.
Yep.
And he's really positive about being back for next season.
Right, okay.
Bigger and better and fitter, so that's sort of good to see.
Yeah, well, it's good to go with that positive mental attitude, because if you don't have it, I think you could be in all sorts of strife.
And our other bloke that I forgot about here at the top of our list, Andrew Naboot.
We've been pronouncing
his name wrong for half a season.
The T is not silent.
Is not silent. He's out there back training, so that's a good sign for...
I hear he's
Saturday.
Getting on the plane, mate.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah, I hear he's getting on the plane, and he'll be there. Whether he comes off the bench, I think we missed him.
Oh, we did, yeah.
You know, we looked...
There's a lot of balls going right, and the
thing that got me is we went back to our old... I know we were going back to the review, but anyway, old bloke's prerogative. We'd get in front of goals and forget what to do.
Yeah.
Whereas Naboot would become screaming, very physical down that bloody right hand side, and if all else failed, he'd try and have a shot.
Yeah.
You know, because which would draw defenders to shut him down, and then we'd have somebody in the box coming in. So anything could have happened, because if he didn't have somebody there that he could put to their foot, he'd try and stick it at the goalkeeper. So, you know, we really missed that. There was a couple of times there, a few people said to me, sitting around where I sit, they said, look, this is not Jets of old, is it? You know, where we get to the front, and get in front of goals and don't know what to do with it. Yeah. And, you know, the old just shoot.
I think our magic striker pair are probably a couple of weeks off format fitness too.
I've seen Coco obviously come in at, I forget what when he came on, what time, I did make a note there somewhere, but for the fact that when he came on, he looked quite good.
He just doesn't sound happy.
Hmm?
Just don't sound happy with that.
Is he going off, is he?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jess Van Straten can be, he's quite an imposing character because he's a big boy, and if that thing, he lets him know. Very nice, constructive criticism.
I think it was a team.
Oh, okay, was it?
Yeah, I don't think he was happy with his kick.
It was a dud kick.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Coco looked to be quite okay, and again, I wouldn't be surprised to see him start this this game. We'll have a look a little bit later on in the session, guys, and when they go into their game and see how they go there. So, okay, anything else you think for the recovery lounge?
Nothing that I can think of. That's about us.
Yeah, so if we have a short recovery lounge, although, again, with the extra... One thing in regards to having more people in recovery lounge, our depth is getting a little bit shallow on that bench. So that's when we've seen Johnny Koutamatis come on. I think I'm not going to... I've probably killed that name. So
yeah, we'll just go with... going with Johnny K.
Johnny K, okay, we'll go with Johnny K. And so he wasn't too bad there, we could see. And I thought, come on... he did quite well, so I think we might be okay there. But from a recovery lounge point of thing, mate, I think that's about it.
I think that's about us.
Okay, so it's until next week for the recovery lounge.
All right, guys. Well, that was the Fill the Hill Friday, and of course you can find that through SoundCloud, and I think they're coming through to iTunes very soon. So thanks to the boys for sending that through, and we'll move on now straight into the news for the week, and it's been a pretty quiet week in terms of news for the Jets, Emma.
Which probably the way we're going with injuries is a good thing.
Well, the boys touched on the injuries, and we'll expand about on that a little bit further. And we'll start with Andrew Naboot. Surprising that he's coming back so early?
I don't think so. They did say 1 to 3 weeks, and... you know, 1 week, that's good. I think they're going to be very keen to have him back. And with those kinds of things, you always are on the side of the caution to start with. And I don't think he'd be coming back if he wasn't ready. So I'm really glad he is.
Yeah, I mean, Anthony, we could have been tempted into rushing him back. And hopefully he has fully recovered, or he's at the extent where he's not going to damage himself any further. Would you expect us, and look, we're probably getting into the preview a bit here, but do you think he's more of a bench option this weekend?
I trust Jonesy to assess his fitness, given that he's sort of had that role for most of his career.
Okay. And Lachlan Jackson, he manages to avoid surgery, which is something really good for the Jets, at least, and for their defensive stocks. All right, well, look, that's the news for the week. I want to talk about the game. I don't know about you guys. Before we get into talking about it, let's have a look at some of the key facts for the Wellington Phoenix as the Jets travel over to New Zealand to play the Phoenix. Current form for the Jets, they've got 5 points from a possible 12 to start the season. They've scored 7 goals, whereas the Knicks are currently haven't got any points. They've lost their first 4 games and scored their first goal during the last round against Melbourne Victory, which they ended up losing 6-1. On Monday night, Emma. Do you think this is going to play into the Jets' hands that there's a short turnaround, there's the travel for the Phoenix after the last round?
Maybe yes and no. I think I've expected better from Phoenix this season. On our season preview, I said they were one of my teams I thought was going to be at the top of the table this year. I thought they'd finally got the right combination of forwards and defenders and midfield, even, bar McGlinchey. And I thought they were going to have a great season. But we do have a habit of playing shit teams back into form. So I think anything can happen this week. They're going to want it. We're going to want it. It's difficult to pick.
Well, Anthony, we're undefeated in the last 4 against the Phoenix. And over in Wellington, we've only lost once in the last 4 years. Is that something that can look to give us a bit of hope this weekend?
I think this week's going to be a bit different. I think Wellington have really got a point to prove.
Mate, they're merely numbers for talking points. They're not official stats, are they, Emma?
There's no p-values.
They're just talking points. So the Phoenix, they've really struggled in front of goal. They're shipping them very freely. Haven't won a game. Emma, would a loss this weekend to the Jets look to actually start placing Ernie Merrick under a fair bit of pressure for losing his job?
If it was any other team, I'd say yes. But I feel like Phoenix are a little bit different to the rest of the clubs in that respect. So I think the people who run Phoenix will give him more time. He has had a lot of player changes this season from last. If it was Victory or City, I'd say he'd be under pressure, but I think he'll get given a chance.
So you think he's built up a bit of a couple of free hits, I guess, with his success over the last couple of years? I mean, last season wasn't so great, but the owners have certainly backed him, and you think they'll stick with him?
For now, I think he's got longer to prove himself. I mean, he can't keep this up for much longer and keep getting away with it, but I think with the changes they've had and with the type of team they are, I think that he needs to be given a little more time to get things settled.
I mean, Anthony, it's very surprising that we see a team like Wellington who, as Emma mentioned, during the off-season, they would have been considered, I guess, one of the teams that would have been looking to be challenging, certainly for the top six. They recruited extremely well and added to the firepower of Roy Krishna, the creative likes of Guy Finkler, Costa Barbarousis. Add on top of that, Jippo Michael McGlinchey, and others, the Rolly Bonavacia, who I think is one of the most outstanding midfielders in the competition. What do you think is going wrong for Phoenix at the moment? Is it simply they're taking time to gel?
I've sort of been thinking about this over the last couple of days. I really think that the international duty that's sort of come up with the All Whites over the past few weeks has obviously really hurt them.
I mean, you raise a really good point there about the effect that international duty has on teams such as Wellington, and, you know, they've got to recruit accordingly with that in mind. It raises a bigger question that we're not going to go into tonight about the A-League starting to observe the FIFA breaks. However, do you think the Jets have a danger of underestimating the Knicks?
Yes, and I think that's what we do all the time. For the last, three seasons we've done this. Someone's been going shit and we're like, it's finally our time. This is a team we can beat. They're below us. And then we get there and we balls it up completely. So, yeah, I think it's a massive danger and they need to keep their heads on straight or it's all going to go wrong for them.
So, look, I guess our discussion's primarily focused around the Phoenix and their poor run of form at the moment. And we'll cap that off by, commentating and recognising Andrew Durante on the weekend is in line to play his 250th A-League match. And after a shocking start to his A-League career through a horrendous tackle, I think it's absolutely outstanding that, firstly, he's been able to come back and have the longevity of his career to reach such a milestone. It's a sore point, I guess, for a lot of Jets fans that he's not doing it in a Jets shirt.
Yeah, that we didn't keep him, that does hurt. But it is nice for it to be a milestone game against us, I think, because, you know, the boys going over to watch the game and the camaraderie between our fans and their fans. So I think that's quite nice.
And we do have quite a few people heading over for the match. I believe that Bodie's somewhere off the western coast of New Zealand at the moment in his canoe paddling over. But in the meantime, I mean, he is serving a two-pod suspension and he's on to the second of those pods with Ferns. But we have allowed him to do some off-field work and he's got an interview now with Patrick from the Yellow Fever.
All right, to give us the Wellington Phoenix perspective on this Saturday's game away at the Cape Tin, we've managed to get in contact with one of the guys from the Phoenix City podcast and a good friend of the Newcastle travelling fans. G'day, Patrick.
How you doing, Ferns?
Mate, we're doing pretty well. Doing pretty well. Looking forward to another action-packed away trip heading over there. But before we get into that, the visiting shenanigans, we thought we'd better get a little bit more professional and get your thoughts on how the Phoenix are going so far. I'm sure that's going to be fun for you to get into.
Well, on paper, it looks like the Phoenix have been doing terribly. 4 games, 4 losses, conceded a bucket load of goals now and scored one. It doesn't look good at all, but things probably aren't as bad as that suggests.
And what gives you the cause for optimism?
Well, the major issue with the start of the season is that we lost our international players, which is half the team, basically, to the international window. They went over to the US and played against the US and Mexico. So that threw off. The first game they weren't here for, we lost to Melbourne City 2-0. The second game they had tricked it all the way across the globe from Tennessee to LA to Sydney, then across to Perth, and arrived 2 days before the game, and we lost 2-0 there. And then came back here, and we played really well against Sydney FC. Barring a couple of dodgy offside calls, we could have got a couple of goals there, and the team was creating chances. We looked good at the back defensively, but Sydney just happened to steal a late goal, and they won that 1-0. Things kind of then fell apart on Monday night, unfortunately. But for periods of the game, we looked good. We gave away 2 penalties in 2 minutes in the first half. Other than that, the defence held up well. And the defence has really got a lot of experience in it this year, given Manny and Siggy. Siggy retired, Manny went to Melbourne City at the end of last year. So we've got 2-3 young guys from the NPL and Marco Rossi coming in from overseas, who has a bit of pedigree to his name, but still learning how the Phoenix play. Yep. We've managed to hold up pretty well until giving away those 2 penalties and then falling apart in the last 20 minutes of the game on Monday and conceding 4 more and going down 6-1.
So did you just see the game on Monday as being held out for as long as possible, but basically Melbourne ran over the top of you?
Well, to be honest, I think the worst part of the game on Monday for us was that we scored a goal.
Yep.
We just lost Dylan Fox. He got a second yellow, probably fairly so. And then Roy Christian won that penalty and slotted it, and all of a sudden it was 2-1, and we had a chance to get another goal and get something out of the game. So we pushed guys forward, in particular Vince Leah, instead of slotting in at centre-back, he pushed further forward into the midfield, and that left us open at the back. Then Melbourne broke forward, I think. Bessart Berisha basically pummeled Adam Parkhouse in the face.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been a foul.
Yeah.
And then Marco Rojas has come and broken our hearts again and scored a third. And from that point, it just fell to pieces. The team didn't set up defensively again, and we fell apart. But I'm not sure if we had scored that goal, if we didn't score the goal and it was still 2-0, would we have pushed forward for another goal? Not so sure.
Yeah.
But it's definitely hard defending with 3 men against that victory attack. Despite that losing Costa and Winkler, it's still very, very potent. So
yeah. Well, you guys have had a little bit of transfer activity, as you mentioned before, a couple of new players coming in, which have, obviously, you've had a lot of, it's fairly similar to the Jets, actually, we've had a lot of turnover, but ours has mainly been due to injury, not losing anybody to internationals, thank God. But in the early stages, which of the new players have been the ones that have impressed you?
The one that's impressed me the most, actually, has been Jacob Tratt. Signed from the NPL along with a few others, but he's slotted in at right back. Louis Fenton's been injured so far this season, and so has Tom Doyle in places. But Jacob Tratt slotted in, and he looks excellent. He's a foot taller than everyone else, barring Marco Rossi. And he's solid getting forward, which Ernie wants out of his wing backs. But defensively, he's doing an amazing job. And for a guy who's playing his first A-League season, that's huge, because usually players come in, they take a wee while to find their feet. He's been great. Marco Rossi, who's come over from playing Serie B in Italy, has shown his pedigree. He's just a cut above anybody else from the NPL that we could have signed, potentially.
Yep.
He's been fantastic just because he's got the experience. Playing at this level is nothing new to him. Unfortunately, he picked up a knock before the game on Monday, and it's still a 50-50 for the game on Sunday, which is probably fortunate for you guys. But those two in particular have impressed me. Adam Parkhouse has looked good getting forward.
Yep.
It's unfortunate that he's been playing left back and has shown not much defensively. He's injured as well this weekend. He got injured from that tussle foul from Bessart Berisha. And Dylan Vox is suspended this weekend. Vox has been at the club for a whole season now. This is his second year, and he impressed last year and has still been impressing me this year, despite getting sent off. So we're developing Australian talent, at the very least. Whether that's going to help us in the park or not on Saturday, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Definitely need Jacob Trett playing and playing well on Saturday to have any chance of a result.
Well, you've mentioned a couple of outs that you've got there. So what's the likely starting 11 you think is going to take the field?
So Glemos will start in goal. It'll be Jura at centre-back. Remains to be seen what the rest of the defensive line looks like. We signed Lowry as well from Perth somewhere, I think.
Yep.
He unfortunately got injured playing for the reserve team on the weekend, so he's 50-50 as well.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we had Tom Doyle on our podcast last night, and he's probably about 60-40 at the moment.
Yep.
So it could be Tom Doyle playing left back, Jacob Trett at right back, and then somebody else playing centre back. I don't want to say it'll be Vince Leah, but it could be Vince Leah.
Yep.
Or it could be much worse than that. It could be Doyle out as well. Maybe Louis Fenton having to be rushed back from injury early. It's very hard to tell what it's going to be. I mean, I haven't been out of training so far this week. I haven't seen what they're doing. So Ernie has a problem there defensively. In the midfield, it'll be Vince Leah if he's not playing in the back line. If he is, then it could be Alex Rodriguez rushed back from injury, which you never want to say about your defensive midfielders. Rolly Bonavacci will play along with Finkler in kind of central midfield areas. Mark McGinty will be out wide, and then Costa and Roy Krishna will finish out the 11. I think that's 11 players.
Yep.
But certainly a bit of worry about what the defensive lines are going to look like.
Well, it's good to know that there's a team other than Jets in the A-League at the moment with a lot of their defensive players missing. So it looks like it might be a pretty even game, thank goodness. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all turns out. So one of the other players that we probably didn't really mention before with the players that came in was Guy Finkler. How have you seen his early impact in the first four games? Is he going to be one of those players that are pivotal, or is it you're more looking at your players like your Bonavacius and your McGlinchies as to be the player that's really going to, if they fire, are going to be the ones that make the difference for you on Saturday?
So what Finkler's done is that by coming into the side, into the central attacking midfielder role that Rowley was playing last year, Rowley's been able to drop back a bit deeper and pick the ball up a little bit earlier in the passages of play. In the game last week where we played Sydney FC, everything that we had going forward was going through Guy Finkler.
Yep.
And he looked fantastic. He was creating chances, bringing McGlinchey into the game, bringing Costa into the game, played a couple of great balls through. And he was pivotal. On Monday night, he was essentially anonymous. I think he's really one of those players that either has a good game or he has a pretty poor game and goes missing. I think all he did in the game really was just studs up the back of someone's Achilles and get a yellow card for it. He's certainly a class player. I mean, I was watching him in pre-season against certainly not quite A-League standard opposition, but he'd pull off a back heel or something and then just jog off like nothing had happened, just nonchalant as anything. I really hope that he can fire, because if he fires, the rest of the attack will fire. The role it is that Ernie wants him to play is pivotal to how everything clicks together. But hopefully he can show more this weekend, like he did against Sydney, than he did on Monday against the Victory.
Just before we get to prediction time, Ernie Merrick is obviously been firming as a favourite for the coach to be the first casualty of the A-League season. Do you see? I've seen some talk around that he's maybe got this game against the Jets and then the following game against the Mariners to get some results, but otherwise he might be on his way out. Do you see that as accurate, or do you think he's probably going to have a little bit more time to work with the players that he's got and work through the injuries and the other issues?
I think he has a little bit more time. It's quite interesting because this is really the first time in his 4 years at the club where his job has become under threat. The first season here, he had Ricky Herbert's squad still, so you gave him a bit of leeway. The second year, we came fourth and was fantastic with Nathan Burns.
Yep.
Last year, we had the license issues, so nobody really questioned his job because there was so much else going on. I think poor results in these two games will make it a lot harder for him to convince the board that he should stay. I don't think he'll lose his job, even if we do perform poorly and maybe only pick up one or two points in these next two games. I think the fact that the international windows are having such an impact on our season this year, with the SFA's refusal to respect them, gives them a little bit more leeway.
Yep.
I mean, anytime you lose six of your starting players, you're going to have trouble. And it's not like these guys are just playing a game in Melbourne, for example, and then flying back to Sydney the day after. They're going halfway around the world. They have to travel to New Caledonia the week after we play the Central Coast Mariners. They have a game in Wellington, and a game in Auckland, and then fly to New Caledonia, which is not an easy flight to make because you're not a bigger 737 or anything. It's the first time Ernie's job's come under question, and you can't blame people. I think the board and the owners will want to see something change quite soon, given the amount of money they've put into signing players like Costa and Winkler. This is the first year where they've really splashed some cash around to get a good squad. And on paper, the squad is fantastic.
Yep.
Few issues at the back, which have been exposed, but up front, we should be scoring goals. And by the sounds of it, there's questions from certain of the ownership group about why we're not scoring. I can't see them being trigger happy. It's not really part of New Zealand culture. I mean, we've only had two coaches in our 10 years in the league. So Sydney go through that about once every year, two yeah. coaches a year. Yeah. So, it's not in our culture. I don't think it's in the board's culture. I would think probably half the season would be the absolute minimum Ernie would get.
And then see what happens.
And then see what happens, yeah. Or if we're still on 0 points after half a season, you'd like to think that he'd probably step aside. The major issue is that there's just nobody else to take over.
Yeah.
Chris Greenacre, who's assistant coach, it's still only his fourth or fifth year coaching. He's not ready, and he'll tell you that he's not ready to take on an A-League team full-time. Yeah. Elsewhere in New Zealand, there's not really anybody who's really sticking their hand up. Ramon Tribuliex, who was the Auckland City FC coach, is probably the only option.
Yeah, I was going to bring him up, actually. Would he be the logical next step?
He would be the logical next step. There's nothing left for him to do in New Zealand football. He's won the National League five times. He's taken teams and won the AFC Champions League, which it's not quite the AFC Champions League, but it's still not an easy tournament to win, given you're playing in the islands all the time.
Yep.
And he's taken the team to the Club World Cup, and everyone heard about how well they've done over there.
Yep.
So there's not much more for him to do in the New Zealand game other than the national team job, which won't be his anytime soon. The Phoenix, he would jump at the chance to coach the Phoenix. He's been looking for an A-League gig for a while. I know he was almost going to get the Brisbane job before Aloisi had it, and he was in line for the Mariners job as well. He made the shortlist there. So I think he would jump at the chance, and he would be the logical choice. Whether he's going to be able to take the squad that they have at the moment and do what he can do with what he's done with Auckland with the squad remains to be seen. But if Ernie were to go, he would pretty much be the only choice from within New Zealand to take over the team. There might be another Australian candidate, hopefully not Frank Farina, but it's hard in New Zealand because we're so small, and
yep.
most of our coaches here are expat British people who have come over here because they weren't really making it in the UK, and not really going to fit the way that Ernie wants to play with the Phoenix. So yeah, Ramon will be the only choice.
All right. So switching back to Sunday, how do you see the game unfolding, and what do you think the score is going to be?
Well, the game's going to unfold on Saturday, so I hope you haven't blocked your flight over for Saturday night.
Saturday. it's force of habit. All our games are on Sunday, so it automatically switches to that.
Yeah, it's quite weird this year. We've got a whole lot of Saturday night games for the first time ever, and it's bizarre. I honestly think that the Phoenix team has to come right at some stage, and we historically perform well against the Jets. I think it's 15 wins, 9 losses or something like that.
Something around that.
The last time you guys flew over here, you did pick up 3 points.
Yeah.
I think that was the first time for a few of you, despite being coming over here for a while.
Yes.
But I think this will probably be 2-1 to the Phoenix. You guys will take an early lead. Things will get nervy on the field and off the field for us, but I think it was just a bit too much class in the team to go 5 games without picking up a point.
Well, I think it'll be an exciting game. I reckon I'm hoping for a 2-2 draw. I just don't want us to go over there and do what we did against Sydney and sit back and not play. So that's my prediction, team, because I'm not on the podcast tonight. I'm just quickly doing this one for you guys so that I can get to bed and get up at 6 a.m. to catch a flight over to Wellington. So we'll wrap it up there. Patrick, thanks very much for coming on. We do appreciate it. If people want to listen to your podcast or they want to get in touch with you via Twitter, how do they do that?
Yeah, so you can find the podcast at yellowfever.co.nz/podcast. This week, like I mentioned, we had Tom Doyle on, who's just been called up for the All Whites as well.
Yep.
Who play next week. Otherwise, you can catch me on Twitter at Patrick478. And I'm sure myself and you guys and some of the guys for Travelling Over will have a few beers over the weekend as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And you can follow all of the away trip shenanigans by following at Squadron Newey. Mate, Patrick, really appreciate it. And we'll see you probably in about 12 hours.
Yeah, probably that.
Nice. Cheers, mate. All right, thanks, mate. See ya.
All right, thanks very much for that interview, Ferns and Patrick, for joining us on the Jet Stream. And all right, guys, we'll get back into talking now about the Jets. Disappointing result against Sydney that we covered off earlier in the pod on Monday. The Jets are going to be looking to bounce back, certainly in this game, Anthony, but the addition of Ben Kantorovsky to the injury list, certainly producing some challenges for Mark James very early in his coaching career.
Yeah, it's a massive challenge, isn't it, having so many players out so quickly, particularly when a lot of them have been in the one area of the field, really, with all of these defenders out at the start of the year. It hasn't been ideal. But no, I think he's done quite well, given the challenges that we've had.
Emma, the Jets sat back against Sydney and were duly punished for taking, I guess, looking to limit damage, or so it was perceived. Hattie, would you look at the Jets to be lining up this week if you were Mark Jones's boots?
I would be trying to avoid a repetition of last week wherever possible. I think last week, I guess, being against Sydney and the firepower they have, you know, they tried something different to try and get around it. But that's not going to work again this week. That said, Wellington's a very different team to play. But they need to get away from those long balls that they were doing last week. They sat way too deep last week. There was no intensity, no press. So, yeah, it definitely, if they repeat last week, there's going to be a riot.
So would you expect, I mean, canter aside, would you be looking to field the same team, or would you be looking to make some changes?
I'd be putting Cowburn back in left back. I'd be putting Vajica, Vuhitsa, however I'm supposed to say it, on the bench. Mm-hmm. I'd be putting Hoffman back in his regular position at the back, because although I tried to champion him, he did not succeed trying to press higher. Mm-hmm. And depending on the fitness of Coco, I'd want Coco to be starting or Clute to be starting and Nobby to be the one coming off the bench.
Interesting. You weren't happy with Nordstrom's performance against Sydney?
It's not that I'm unhappy with him. It's that he's an impact sub. He is a really good sub. And I keep saying this every time we talk about the bench. To me, being on the bench does not mean you're the second best player for the position. Being off the bench can mean that you have a strategy for taking hold of the game when you come on. So I'm not saying use him as a late sub, but I think starting Coco and or Clute and bringing Nobby in afterwards will help us keep control of the game throughout the 90 minutes.
So who are you pushing out wide to the right to replace Jason Hoffman?
I haven't thought that one through fully.
Okay, well, we can come back to you on that one. Anthony, Emma's made a couple of changes there to the team, or her suggested lineup. Would you be making similar changes, or would you be looking to stick with the same lineup as last week?
Yeah, look, I'd be sort of more inclined to stick with a similar lineup. I'd love to see Hoffman play it right back again. Mm-hmm. I just thought he just caught out of position too many times last week, playing that more forward role. But yeah, it really is a case of who do you bring back in that midfield?
If all three of them started and Naboot came off the bench, that'd be great. Or you could keep Vajica on and give Cowburn a go at the higher position, because he's a midfielder as well, so he can't do worse than Hoffman did last week. Sorry, Hoffman, I still love you.
That's possible.
Yeah, you could give that a go, but yeah.
Look, if it was me, I don't think that either Cowburn or Vajica have really done anything wrong or haven't performed poorly enough to warrant being dropped. I certainly think if Hoffman wants the right back position, to be his, he needs to earn it back again, or look for Cowburn to slip up, or touch wood, be injured. I would probably, I'd be looking for a little bit more energy, more attacking energy, I'd say, down that right-hand side. I wouldn't be starting with the 4-4-2 that we saw this week. I'd probably look to move Houle back out wide, put Wayne Brown in behind Nordstrand, with Jugarkovic and Poljak being those two screeners. And out on the right, I'd actually look to play Devante Clute. I think his energy and his ability to... I think Nordstrand, Brown, Houle and Clute, while not very tall in stature, they're quick and nimble, and they have that flexibility, and I think they also have a bit of nous to interchange within those four. They all have that ability to play in behind. They all have that ability to possibly lead the line. We've seen them do that in round two, round three, round four. Round one, round two, round three. I certainly think that there's potential for that fluid attack. Whether we've had time to work on that this week, I don't know. That's the 3-point question. Emma, have you decided who's playing right wing for you yet?
Well, ideally it would be Naboot, if he's fit enough to start.
Okay, fair enough. So, tactics. Are we looking to sit back at the against Wellington? Again, traditionally a difficult place to go. We've had some recent success there, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Are we looking to take the game to Wellington? Because we've really struggled to retain the ball and have our passes stick in midfield in particular. Emma?
I think we can't sit back, given the way we've played the last couple of weeks. Even though I do think we are better on the counter-attack, I think Wellington are going to want it so much. If we sit back, we're going to get punished. Also, Wellington have so many yellow cards this season. So if we can keep the pressure on them, we can balls up some of those guys who have been ballsing up under pressure. So I think, you know, they had two yellows in the box with two penalties in 2 minutes last week. Like, that's just ridiculous. So people obviously do not have their clear heads on, and if we can take advantage of that, that's going to help us.
And, Anthony, I guess the one position we haven't all discussed, because I think it's probably just assumed, but Johnny Katrumbas is coming in for his starting debut for the Jets in place of Ben Kantorovsky.
I think that'd be massive for him. I thought he was quite composed when he came on last week, and I thought he did quite well. It'd be good to see how he goes for 90 minutes, follows on from where he left off last week. I just wanted to touch on, like, the tactical side. I'd love to see us take on Wellington. Like, they've got two, like, their fullbacks in Parkhouse and Tratt. They're not the best fullbacks in the world. So I think, you know, whoever does end up playing out wide, if we take them on out wide, I reckon we're in with a shot to get a couple of goals past them.
Well, they're missing Dylan Fox as well, who will be absent from the game after receiving a second yellow card in the match against the Victory. So, however, their Italian import, Marco Rossi, will be returning from injury. And they've also brought Hamish Watson into the squad.
More cards, he's a...
Well, yeah, it's actually interesting that a player has been sent off in this match in each of the last four games or meetings between these two clubs. Two of those, I think, were Dan Mullen, but let's not go there.
Looking at our referee this week, I don't think that's going to...
So, you've brilliant segue into that. Sean Evans, the bricky from Melbourne, as Foxtel, the Fox Sports commentators love to keep on reminding. However, he is now a full-time referee. Will be looking after this match. He's actually been quite reserved with his cards, following essentially dishing them out very, very freely in the round one game that he refereed. Anthony, what are your thoughts on Sean Evans?
I think FFA have got a lot of work to do with Sean this year to get him to be a more consistent referee. Because obviously we've got these guys that are now full-time referees. We want them to be our best referee. And at the moment, for me, I don't think Sean's one of the three best referees in the league.
All right. Time to put your money where your mouth is. Emma, what is your prediction?
We're going to win 2-0.
Okay, who's going to score?
Coco.
Coco. All right, very good. Two. He's going to get two.
I'm going to go Naboo for the other one. No, Naboo with all the assists. Clute for the other one.
Okay, very good. And Anthony, what's your prediction?
I'm going to go 3-1 Newcastle, and I'm going to go Morten Nordstrand, and I'll pick Bogard to get his third for the year.
Okay, very good. I'm actually going to go... I think we're going to have learnt from the last couple of weeks where we've played teams that really try to press us hard. I don't think Wellington will have, apart from Bonaventura, I don't think that they'll have the energy in their team. I mean, they've got the likes of McGlinchey, Barbarouzos out wide who can press, but I don't think they have the full energy through that team to press us consistently, and I think we're going to look to go back to the formula that was working for us in the first two rounds. We really need to target their wide defenders, as you said, I think it was Anthony. They're young, they're inexperienced, and we really need to take advantage of it. I'm going to go with 3-0. I think Nordstrand will again score against Wellington. I think Hoffman will also get one. I think Hoffie will start. Even though I said that he wouldn't, I think that we're actually going to stick with our team from last week. I just got that feeling. Let's say Clute as well coming off the bench. All right. Before we talk about the rest of the games for round five, let's touch onto the Newcastle Jets women. They start their campaign this weekend on Sunday in Melbourne at 3 p.m. against Melbourne City. News, I guess, coming out of the camp, there's been a fair bit of news prior to this first game of the week, or of the round, season, should say. Anthony, is that Beachwood Homes are back on board with the sponsorship of the W League team this year. Great to have Beachwood back on board.
To give our girls a hand. And yeah, I mean, obviously, it's good for them to continue their partnership with the club in any way. But yeah, I just think it's good to see, you know, companies getting behind the W League. That's how it's going to grow, by further investment through things like, you know, sponsorships like we've got here with Beachwood, and, you know, like the other clubs have around the league with their, you know, with their major sponsors. You know, these are the guys, these major sponsors of each club's W League team. Like, they're the companies that are going to help us get the revenue we need to drive the W League forward and help grow the women's game. So I think it's positive all around.
Did you have anything to add on that, Emma?
Oh, no, sponsorship is great. That's an obvious.
Very good. I guess it's been a major season of change for Craig Deans and his team. I guess just is the nature of the league at this stage. But we have a number of local talented players coming back who were with the team last team. Some examples are Kaya Simon, the captain, will return. Cassidy Davis, Riley Dobson will also come back. However, it's sad to see that Hannah Southwell, their goalkeeper, is sitting this year out. I believe she's going to rugby union. Tara Andrews, Chloe Legarza, who's picked up who actually went overseas to the Women's World Cup and has picked up a contract in Sweden. And unfortunately, the return of our US import, Caprice Tedesco, won't be back. She sustained an injury in the final of her match for Chicago for the Washington Spirit, and she's done her ACL. She's out for quite a while.
I'm so devastated about that.
She was an absolute gun.
She was my favourite last season, and I really wanted to see her play again.
I was shattered as well. And Caprice, if you happen to be listening, we wish you all the best for your recovery and hope to see you back out here next season. In saying that, Washington Spirit player and Jets central defender Megan Oyster, who was out here last year, will return, and she's bringing along with her Kelsey Weiss, who is also a goalkeeper from the Washington Spirit. They're also joined by another two American players from the Chicago Red Stars in Aaron Gilliland and Jen Hoy. Those players. I think Aaron Gilliard is an American international. She's looking to replace Caprice Tedesco in the midfield, and Jen Hoy is this striker looking to take the place of Tara Andrews. Anthony, sounds like a very strong, experienced spine of the team there. goals were the problem for the Jets last year. Hopefully these signings are going to resolve that issue.
Yeah, hopefully. Jen Hoy is obviously, she was interviewed the other day at the ground, and you know, so she's a striker that loves to score goals. So I'm sure that the Jets fans that get down to the W League games will love to see her bang in heaps for it.
Emma, having a look at some of the other teams as well, they're all making signings of international players. Obviously, it must be the off-season of a number of the major leagues overseas, primarily the US. Is it also good for the W League that they're able to attract these sorts of players and these international players to come to our league?
Oh, most definitely, because American women's football is well ahead of where we are in terms of profile and coverage. And I saw on Twitter this week that some of the fans were asking their American players whether or not they're going to be able to watch their Australian games on TV. So that's fantastic coverage for our young Australian players who are coming through, if they can get some exposure in the US. And the seasons being opposites is just perfect.
Well, I mean, Craig Deans was also saying in the press that he received a number of calls from a number of agents about a vast array of players that were looking to come out here to Australia as well. So certainly bodes well for the league. And the Jets have a number. I think we've got six games that we're coinciding. The where the women will be the game prior to the A-League game.
Yeah, these women are going to be the reason why I have skin cancer as an old lady.
Oh, look, I think it's fantastic. I made it to two of the three games last year, and it was a great day to go watch the football and certainly encourage people to go along. The Jets last year were unlucky. They needed a win on the final day and I guess some results to go in their favour. But they ended up going, they had a nil all draw with Brisbane Roar in that final match, and they fell 3 points short of making the finals. Anthony, with the recruitment of these players, do you think the expectations are going to be higher and finals is a must for Craig Deans?
Possibly. It's hard to tell. Depends on, I guess, the signings that the other clubs have made. I honestly haven't looked too much into some of the other squads.
Okay, so if people want to follow more about or find out more about the Jets Women, they're obviously on Facebook and they're on Twitter at Jets Women. They go through the primary Newcastle Jets website, and there's also a women's game. It's called the Women's Game website, where you can also find details and track the score. So hopefully, we're reporting on the game next week, and the girls have had a win. Okay, so let's talk about the rest of round five for the A-League. On Friday night, kicking off at 8:10, we have Brisbane and Melbourne City. Both teams, Emma, had a 2-1 win last week. What's your prediction and how do you think things will look up?
I'm not very good at this part of the preview because I always tip with my heart and not my head. I'm right. So sick of City. I really want Raw to take them. So that's okay. What I'm going to go with. Positive.
You're not picking a score?
Okay, I'll go 3-2. I think there'll be lots of goals.
All right, okay, interesting. Anthony?
Yeah, look, I think Brisbane have improved a lot. Yeah, I don't know. I still think they're pretenders under John Van Skip. So I reckon that Brisbane's going to win, and I reckon it'll be 2-0.
Okay. I'm going for a 1-1 draw in this match. I think they're both two good teams. I'm still struggling to work out sometimes what Melbourne City are doing with their attack. And I think it's Brandon with his hair. Far out. That's a mullet and a half right there.
I think the biggest result for us out of that Brisbane-Melbourne City game would be a couple of red cards, given that we've got them next week. So here's hoping.
Like Thursday night. On a Thursday night too. So, yeah, I'm tipping 1-1. Saturday, Anthony, the game after ours is the Big Blue between Sydney and Melbourne victory. It's being held in Sydney. Sydney's win last week puts them a loss actually for Melbourne victory against Sydney would put Sydney well out in front on 15 points after five rounds. Do you think Melbourne victory are going to be able to take anything from this game? And do you think they'll be able to beat the defensive wall that has been Sydney FC at the moment?
I reckon I reckon it's going to be a cracker of a game. Not as good as the game before it, obviously, but look, I can't see anyone stopping Sydney at the moment. Maybe it was just us last week and the way we played right into their hands, but I just think Sydney are playing really well. Obviously, they haven't conceded a goal in 4 weeks, and that's a solid achievement on its own. But Victory, I think, have just been too inconsistent, like, so far. I don't think they haven't had any good performances. I mean, obviously, 6-1 against West, you know, I just don't think that they've, I don't think Victory have hit their level yet, and I don't think Sydney are going to step aside and let them do it this week. I think Sydney will win it, yeah, quite comfortably.
Okay. Not putting a score out?
No. I don't want to say 2-0 because I've already used that one, but I'll go 2-0 Sydney.
Okay, Emma?
I think it really depends. Like Anthony said, Victory have been so inconsistent. So if the good Victory team comes, they're going to put on a good show. If the bad Victory team comes, they're going to get smashed. I think this will be the week that Sydney do concede. So I'm going to tip a draw. I'm going to go a high-scoring draw, like a 2-2-all or a 3-all.
Okay. I've also put down here, I agree with Anthony, 2-0 to Melbourne. 2-0 to Sydney. I think that they'll just be too good for Melbourne. Melbourne looking to back up after a Monday night game, short turnaround, all that sort of stuff. So I think Sydney will just be too good. Sunday, 5 p.m., we have two first of two matches. We have a bottom-of-the-table six-pointer almost already very early in the season between Adelaide, who are hosting the Central Coast Mariners. Emma, what are your thoughts?
Adelaide are pretty ravaged with injuries, the same as us, so that's going to make it pretty rough for them. But Mariners are the Mariners, so what are they going to bring? Funny. I'm going to go 1-0 to Adelaide.
Rightio. Look, I think Emma's right. Adelaide are a team that are certainly struggling with injuries. They've got a number of key players out, but Serge Guardiola scored his first goal on the weekend, and I think he's going to add another 4 to his tally, so 4-0 to Adelaide. There you go, Bodes. Finally, 7 o'clock on Sunday, we have Perth Glory versus the Western Sydney Wanderers. Kenny Lowe will again be watching from the stands. Western Sydney have the chance to leapfrog Perth after they had a loss last week. But, you know, Western Sydney, they conceded late and had a draw with the Mariners. I've gone for 2-1. Adam Taggart, he's promoted back into the team. Look for him to run Western Sydney Wanderers ragged. And, Perth to take all 3 points from there. Okay, well, that's the end of the podcast. And if you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/JetstreamNewey, on Twitter at JetstreamNewey, or you can also email the podcast at podcast@newcastlefootball.net. We're available on iTunes or through any of your podcast apps, and we're also now on Stitcher. So that's it. Other than that, go the Jets.
We forgot to say the baby keeper's in the squad this week.
Oh, we did.
Baby keeper.
And good luck to Noah James, the 15-year-old who's filling in for the injured Piers Clark on the weekend. Very good luck to you, mate. All the best.
Hopefully no keepers get their teeth kicked in and he doesn't actually have to have a go.
That's it. I've just been waiting for weeks as well to go, ah, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am.
You know, you don't actually have to do that. There's a recording that plays, right?
Oh, well, hopefully Jones is going to keep that part out.
Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. For something.